What the EFL? It's the Weekly Football League podcast. On this episode, Mick's bailing out of QPR. What Etherington next at Crawley? We look back on the FA Cup second round and ahead to the weekend's action. Add some scouting reports too, and that is What the EFL, now powered by Quinbet. Bit of a different show this week, gang. We'll dip our toe into the water that is the FA Cup and look ahead to some of the weekend's matches. First, though, a word from our sponsor, read by me. To coincide with the World Cup, the guys at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer, where you can now get a free bet up to £35. It's for new customers that sign up only. Head to www.quinbet.com/world-cup-2022-offer-UK. You can check out full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided. It's 18 plus. And remember, always gamble responsibly. That link will be in the description of the podcast for you. Tricky to say now, but last week Sam went for Brazil. Clarkie went for Argentina. Probably a little bit concerned at halftime in the Mexico game on Saturday, Adrian, but they turned it round. I'm not quite sure they're looking like world champions, mind you.
I was thinking the same, yeah. They don't look like World Cup winners, but that second half was good from Argentina. And obviously Messi stepped up to the plate. Great second goal as well, wasn't it? And yeah, they're the sort of nation, I think, that can be galvanised by a half like that. So I'm not writing them off, but I have to say, if you ask me to pick right now, I'd probably go for Brazil or maybe even France, because Mbappe looks a bit useful, doesn't he, that kid? But yeah, I'm going to stick with Argentina.
Sam, what noise did you make when you saw that Richarlison overhead kick the other night?
I was away for the night, wasn't I? So I think I watched it back on Twitter, but thoroughly enjoyed it. Thoroughly enjoyed it, yeah. disappointed in Clive Tilsey, saying that it was a raw first touch or whatever he said, because I think that just made it better, didn't it? He's not going to be able to execute that if he'd have had a more assured first touch. So I enjoy the way it popped up. But yeah, they're looking good, aren't they? I would be a little bit concerned, given my experience of ankle injuries, whether Neymar will make any more football. He's certainly not going to play the next couple of games. I know they're in action today. So yeah, that's a bit of a concern, but looking good, them and England. Come on, they're my two.
All right, well, head to quinbet.com for the very latest prices on the World Cup outrights and all the other markets as well. Okay, first today, we're going to talk some news. Oh dear, dear, Sam. 20th of October, here's a quote from Michael Beale. I've been all in here and I've asked others to be all in, so I can't be the first to run away from the ship. This is when he was linked with the Wolves job. You're a QPR fan. As we record, he is apparently in Glasgow sorting out the finer points of his move to join Rangers, the other Rangers, as manager. He asked us not to call him Mick. I'm sort of assuming that you've been calling him something a bit spicier than that over the last couple of days.
He definitely got Michael'd off in some of the footage that I've seen from various broadcasters this morning. I'm disappointed as a fan, disappointed for my fellow fans, because the majority of this season has been really good up until the last half a dozen games. So it's frustrating, because I think under Mark Warburton and under Mick Beale, QPR have been on the right road. So it's going to be a little bit into the unknown again, who they go and get to replace him. Hopefully it'll be someone who's playing a similar style and, you know, cut from a similar cloth. I think there's a few things going on here. I'm sure Clarkie's got his view on it. I think European football's got to be a pull. The opportunity to obviously get ahead of Celtic, become a legend at that club. That's the goal, isn't it? I suppose when you go up and manage one of the old firm. He's familiar with it. He's familiar with the players and people like Brendan Rodgers. And Postecoglou, have I said that right? Stephen Gerrard. These guys have all got good jobs in the Premier League, or he will go on, Postecoglou will go on and get a good job off the back of what he's done at the old firm. So I think that Mick Beale will get a Premier League job if he goes up there and be successful. Whether that would materialise staying at QPR, I'm not so sure. Obviously, he was hot, wasn't he, a month or two ago. But I think there's a lot of things, actually, that go into it to being successful in the Championship. I think you need a bit of luck. I think the resources have to be there. And, you know, at QPR, we've seen without Chris Willock recently, and with them being found out a little bit, he's probably, his worth has probably just subsided a little bit. So I can understand it. I'm disappointed. but onwards and upwards, and hopefully we'll replace him with someone of similar quality.
Clarkey, firstly, A, what do you make of the move? But also, B, is he going to find it slightly difficult in that it's pretty much the same squad that he had, you know, he was involved with when Steven Gerrard was the manager? If you were formerly the number two or a coach, you're going to be a bit difficult for him to come in as the number one, or is that not a thing these days?
No, I don't think it's such a big deal. Now, I think in the past, if you'd have asked me this 10 years ago, I would have said number twos really struggled to make it as first-team managers. But we've seen the evidence of many, many managers that have trodden that path and been absolutely fine. I mean, they're not going to win the league this year, are they? I think they're quite a bit behind. So it's going to be a slow burn. I get the temptation, exactly what Sam said there. And the Championship is the most brutal league, maybe in the world, in terms of sackings, isn't it? And the truth is, it's probably a slightly more secure job at Rangers than it is at QPR. So I do understand. But what he should have done really when he went with it all in quotes was just add a line in and say, but that, you know, it'd have to take something really special, or, you know, there are only one or two jobs out there that would turn my head. If he'd have added that at the time, we could take this on the chin, or QPR fans could, because he was so strong on it. Oh, what a great guy. Now he just looks like a muppet, doesn't he? And I think that Mickey Beale is not going to be remembered fondly at Loftus Road now. It's a little bit treacherous.
The one little element I didn't mention in terms of the factors is financial as well, Clarkey. You know, that's got to come into the equation when he's considering it. And I know he'd got a significant bump up from Wolves, but that's going to be similar for going to Rangers, and he has that familiarity. And I think there's more chance of him doing well at Rangers and getting a Premier League job than him going to Wolves.
I agree.
And maybe having longevity in the Premier League.
I agree. And how bad will it make Steven Gerrard look if he's a success there? If he smashes it out of the park there, he's going to stitch up his mate reputation-wise, isn't he? Because everyone's already saying, well, Gerrard was only successful because of Beale. Well, let's see.
Elsewhere, Matty Etherington is the new Crawley boss, replacing Kevin Betsy. He's bringing Simon Davis with him from Peterborough, where they were managing.
Of course he is.
The under-21s. Adrian, I like it, giving, you know, an up-and-coming coach a chance. It's very much the thing, isn't it, at the moment? But given that they've just done that and it didn't work out, would they maybe have been better going for some experience?
Well, it's risky for the two guys in question, Etherington and Davis, because they were in safe jobs, doing very well in those jobs, club legends at Peterborough. But it's also risky for Crawley Town. The truth is, are the Crypto Brothers going to get an experienced head? Which experienced manager out there fancies Crawley at the moment, fancies working with this new setup, different way of working, where the finances are funded by NFTs and what more? So I think that they've limited their own market to young up-and-coming coaches, in my opinion. So let's see. It's not a results-based business, is it, being a youth team manager or an under-21 boss? But they have won a couple of titles, Etherington and Davis, with Peterborough United's junior team. So they've had success. They've also been responsible for bringing through a number of players at London Road. It's a great academy, isn't it? And I think they've done a terrific job. But so did Kevin Betsy. Kevin Betsy was one of the most highly rated coaches in the country. And Arsenal were very happy with him. And look what happened there. So, yeah, we'll see. But I wish them the best of luck. Nice guys, the pair of them.
The interesting thing with this is it doesn't feel like any manager is going to get patience, even across one campaign.
Yeah.
So this is probably going to be the third style of football, Clarkey, in, what, 20-odd games? Because it looked like Lewis Young went a little bit more back to basics. You know the way that Kevin Betsy liked to set up. It was really intricate, you know, very, very modern style of play. I think we spoke about Arsenal's younger sides not really having a formation. It was all just rotation and different setups according to which players he had available, etc. So this is essentially going to be two guys coming in with probably completely different ideas. So that's a a challenge I would present probably to any dressing room. So
they made the change anyway. Three wins, three draws, one defeat for Young. I mean, it wasn't like he was doing badly, was it?
Not at all. I think we talked him up about a month ago, didn't we? The last couple of results haven't been great, but I was shocked when I saw it come through. And the reason for my little gag a minute ago was, you think of Matt Everington, you just think of Simon Davis, don't you? So when I read on the press release that he was involved, it was glorious.
Ant and Dec, aren't they? Yeah.
The Ant and Dec of the EFL, are like that. Maybe the bigger concern for Crawley supporters is the collapse of value of cryptocurrency. We'll see if that affects them at all. Hopefully not, but good luck to Matty Adrington, the new Crawley boss. Okay, next today, we're going to dip our toes into the FA Cup. Well, Adrian and Sam were both up for the Cup this weekend. We'll have a chat about the games they presided over shortly. Not loads of shocks in round two, but a couple worth mentioning. Chesterfield 2-0 winners at AFC Wimbledon. My note from this, Clarkey, was that maybe this is a bit of a shop window for Paul Cook, because it doesn't seem that long ago that we had him on our old pod as Ipswich boss, flying high in League One, you know, having had that brilliant spell at Wigan where he almost did the impossible and saved them in the Championship. Now he's a National League manager. He's not fallen off the radar, but, you know, he's had to go down a couple of steps to try and get back up again. Results like this will help remind people of his quality.
Yeah, definitely. It's a pretty attractive National League job. You know, got a few quid of Chesterfield. It's a big
difficult
old budget
league to get out of, though, right?
Well, it is with Wrexham in it. That is for sure.
County, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that, yeah, maybe. I think he'll probably will get them up, but maybe not this year, Paul Cook. But yeah, a little bit of a shop window, I guess. I just think there's not much between the teams in the bottom half of League Two and the top end of the National League now. I think there's 13 places separating the two sides in the pyramid. So I don't think this is a massive shock. Both teams were flying ahead of the game, weren't they? The Dons were unbeaten in 10. Chesterfield, I think, were looking for their sixth win on the spin. So yeah, it was two teams in good nick. One turned up, the other didn't. Wimbledon, just really flat performance from them. Big miss from Harry Pale. We heard, didn't we, from Jacko about what a good lad he is, bit of a wind-up merchant. Well, he wouldn't have been laughing at the sort of open goal he missed from 3 yards out at 1-0 down. So, yeah. And then, of course, a few minutes later, a cross goes straight in for Chesterfield and bang, they're out.
Well done for not saying he'll be getting Harry Pelters, because that went through my mind. probably the biggest shock of the weekend. Although, is it a shock? This Sam Boreham Wood winning 2-0 at Bristol Rovers means the third year in a row that Boreham Wood have reached the third round. Apparently, Bristol Rovers had some illness in the squad before the game, but Luke Garrard, he's not going to be at Boreham Wood much longer, is he? Their manager, having not Bournemouth out the cup last season, now overseen this, talking about shop windows, he's definitely putting himself in the metaphorical one.
Well, he's been spoken about for about 5 years now, so I'm not sure why it hasn't happened for him. He was a young player at Swindon with me. He made his debut alongside me, so go back, you know, a number of years. And yeah, I mean, this is something that seems to be happening season after season. Well, it has done, and this was no fluke. Again, you know, similarly to the Chesterfield result, they were the better side here. And yeah, Joey Barton can talk about illnesses, injuries, whatever. There was only really Jordan Rossiter that I noticed that was, you know, not in the match day squad. So that was a really strong Bristol Rovers side. Boreham Wood kind of know what they are, really comfortable in their skin. They're not a kind of modern through the thirds type team. You could see from the goals, the set piece goals, real physical presence, only 29% of the ball, but deserved the victory. Absolutely. And I saw this morning, Matt, you've already gone into football cliches with your quote from the weekend. I like this from Joey Barton. Can you tell me if this is football cliches worthy? Because I'm a bit of a novice. referring to the FA Cup. This competition has shown over the centuries that league placing doesn't matter. That's not right. Centuries is incorrect, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. The first FA Cup final would have been 18 something. So
yeah,
we'll I mean, it's been over three centuries.
Yeah,
yeah. You've got to go. I mean, does he know about shocks back in the 1800s? I'm not sure he does. Does he?
Over the years,
would be in Eton College or whatever it was, and yeah, that was a massive upset. But no, I take your point. You go decades, then you're just many years.
So if you're going to chuck in centuries, you've got to have a minimum five for me.
Yeah, this could be football cliches we're listening to. But fully deserved. Absolutely. And he gets linked with the Swindon job when it comes up. And I'm not sure if he's ever been, you know, as far as getting an interview, but you would imagine that a league club will take him eventually, and it'll be deserved.
Not a shock, but Oxford beat Exeter by 4-1. We were saying a couple of weeks ago that Carl Robinson probably should have left in the summer. Shows what we know. I love this quote, Clarkey, on Billy Bowden, who scored twice. Billy Bowden sometimes has a flippancy to his game, which can frustrate people. But when he gets it right, he's very good and he knows the game. A manager ever describe you as flippant?
Not flippant, but similar. Similar. I got called too casual, too laid back. I got hammered by some of my managers for my shoulders being hunched and my body language being absolute garbage. I was just one of these guys when I didn't have the ball. I wasn't on my toes and I didn't have my arms up here, you know, doing this. I just would sort of stroll around a little bit, and I've got bad posture anyway. And I think it gave the impression to a lot of my managers that I really didn't care, that I didn't give a crap. And it wasn't true. But yeah, managers that didn't know me took a while to get over that, which was a little bit frustrating. And yeah, no one wants to be called flippant, really, but it's basically saying you don't really care, isn't it? I mean, it's not that nice a thing to say, but he is a talent, Bowden. And yeah, they did well here, didn't they? Coming into some good form. Only lost one, I think, at their last eight. Started scoring a lot of goals now, Oxford. So worrying, I think, for Exeter. The last few performances haven't been the best.
Sorry, I was more knows the game camp.
So, Adrian, you were on hand to see Stevenage saunter into round three. They got 3 goals in 9 minutes in the second half away to Kings Lynn Town. What was the ground like? What were Kings Lynn like? And did you break bread with your old pal, Steve Evans, afterwards?
Of course I didn't. No, I avoided eye contact with Steve Evans. I did walk
probably
past
him. Probably
wouldn't
get much of the bread, to be fair, would you?
No. I'll never forgive him for running onto the pitch to get me sent off all those years ago. It was, it's just ate away at me. He was really quiet in the game. He didn't get out of his technical area once. He sat in the dugout the whole game, left it to Paul Rayner, which was really interesting. The ground is one of the oldest in the country. Proper non-league ground. It's got a massive main stand that you could see in League One, but the rest of the ground is sort of terracing. Yeah, it was nice. 4,200 and something there, so it was a decent atmosphere. I was impressed with Stevenage second half. First half, by the way, it was a really good game, competitive, and Stevenage had gone really narrow with a 4-4-2 diamond and Jordan Roberts in behind the front two, and it wasn't working. And to their credit, Kings Lynn had worked it out, used the wings. They just kept switching it to the fullbacks or the wingers, and they got themselves up the pitch. What they did, they recognised it. It took them about half an hour, Stevenage. They recognised what was happening, changed it to 4-3-3, and it was a totally different game. And apparently, Steve Evans ripped into his players at halftime. Absolutely hammered them, and you could tell because they were different animal after the break. Really, really impressed. Few eye catchers actually. Jamie Reid up front, exceptional. Lovely goal from him. Really good assist as well. Clever centre forward that sort of gets himself lots of chances. Luke Norris got a double. Good header. Really calm sort of pass finish as well from the edge of the box. Two centre halves, excellent. Dan Sweeney and Piers Jarny. I think Sam's talked about them before. Really, they had this big unit up front called Gold Omoteo. I mean, if you're called Gold, you've got to be a good player, haven't you? He could look after himself. He was like a box. Apparently, he was a former MMA fighter, Gold Omoteo. And Sweeney and Piers Jarny just bullied him. It was pretty impressive. So, yeah, 3 good goals. Good second half performance. On they march. I can see why they're flying high. I can. They know their game. Yeah, they're sort of comfortable in what the manager's asking. And it was a very confident performance.
Former MMA fighter called Gold. You think he'd have the power to know that he's indestructible and always believe it, but apparently not. Finally, we've got an answer to the question that's plagued football fans for decades. And I'm going to say decades rather than centuries. Which fleet is better, Ebbs or Wood? The answer was Wood. Tell us more, Sam.
Well, Ebbs Fleet were the better side for large periods of this game. And we probably shouldn't be too surprised because it's only the amount of games they've played essentially as to why they're not top of the National League South. They were top going into the weekend, but they've fallen to third now in that division. I think quite big budget, good resources, plans to build a new stadium club that's going places, really. I spoke to their captain, Chris Solly, former like Charlton legend, really, played in, like, I think over 200 games for Charlton. He's their captain. And I knew that they were a very kind of footballing team, wanted to play through the thirds, possession based. And in the first half, that was really evident. With that, they created loads of chances. They got a bit of an old fashioned front two in Dominic Polian, who you remember, young man who started at Leeds and has played in every level, I think, in England. And a lad I wasn't too au fait with, Rakesh Bingham, who's a old-fashioned type centre forward, but a lovely touch. So he was dropping off and playing Polion in behind. They combined really well. And there was a big big contrast between the way that Morton and Garner were kind of leading the line for Fleetwood. I thought that was the big difference in the first half. Those two were excellent for Ebbsfleet. The only problem, when they had that spell, just couldn't get the goal. Polion spurned about three or four chances. But similarly to what Clarkie was just saying, I would imagine Scott Brown had a few words at halftime, considering the non-leaguers had been the better side. He changed it second half. He's been a 3-5-2 man this season, really, Scott Brown. He went 4-3-3, and what it did, it cut off that pass into the centre forward. He had a more solid midfield three. They were getting into the big front man too easy, Ebbsfleet, and the kind of attacking midfielders of Ebbsfleet were getting in to little pockets of space. He kind of secured that area, got another player up the top end of the pitch. Another name for you, Matt, Promise Omocheri. Him and Gold, and they've got to play up front together, haven't they?
Golden Promise.
Golden Promise. it's outstanding.
I think we name checked him before, but he went kind of wide on the right hand side, and it wasn't so much his kind of performance, but I just thought that the change in shape kind of solidified Fleetwood. And the difference in the game was a really good individual goal from Jed Garner, who, again, we probably spoke about previously last season on the pod. He had a little period where he was full of goals. That's his second of the season. It was a kind of 2v1, a giveaway in the middle of the pitch from Ngessen from Ebbsfleet. And he had the pass on to Omocheri, but took the strike on himself and found the bottom corner. And from then on in, they managed it really well. So in summary, good tactical switch from Scott Brown, a little bit of that Nouse probably being the league side shining through in the end, but ever so impressed with Ebbsfleet. One name to pick out, Lewis Warrington, on loan from Everton, the base of Fleetwood's midfield. And he left a little bit hung out to dry in the first half, hence the problems, but on the ball, orchestrating the kind of pace of the game, he was really impressive. So definitely one to look out for.
Well, listener, you might well know who your team's got in the third round. The draw for that is tonight, Monday, as we record. Hopefully you get what you want. I'm after another nice, easy home tie against Arsenal for the two-time European champions, Nottingham Forest. All right, next today, we're going to do our scouting report. Adrian, you can go first this week. Morgan Whittaker of Plymouth, having a good season on loan from Swansea. Tell me a bit more about him.
Very good season on loan from Swansea. Yeah, I'm a little bit surprised that Swansea have written off the prospect of him coming back this season, because he's been exceptional, really, at League One level. Got Player of the Month in September. His manager said he was unlucky not to get it in October as well. You look at the goals and the assists, 7 goals, 5 assists. I was looking at those 12 contributions, and they're worth 13 points. 13 points for Plymouth overall this season. So he's been a valuable player. And plays sort of number 10 to the right. Remember I talked about Finn Azaz a few months ago or weeks ago? He's been injured lately. He goes to the left of the attacking midfield, Morgan Whittaker to the right. Yeah, no one's had more shots off the end of dribbles than Morgan Whittaker this season. He runs with the ball for fun. He creates chances on the back of those runs as well. And I was looking at his assists, 2 or 3, just perfect through balls, just putting strikers away for 1v1s. He's happy to slip passes into the box for teammates as well. And with his finishing, couple from the edge of the box, left-footed. Got a worldie at Charlton earlier on in the season off the back of a long, long run. He looks a class act. I remember seeing him in the flesh when he was at Derby, when he was probably only 17, 18. And he looked good, but a little bit, you know, lightweight, wasn't going to make that impact. He's filled out. You can see he looks like a man now. And I think he's probably too good for League One. I think he'll be in the Championship next season. No one in the division, and this is an impressive stat, has had more open play non-penalty shots than him per 90 minutes. 4.38 shots per game for Morgan Whittaker, and he's not even a striker. He's an absolute goal threat.
Wow, sounds like he's going to add to those 7 goals before the season's out. So that's Morgan Whittaker. Sam, your subject. I'm not sure what his chant is, but if it's there's only one Cameron Humphreys, then they need to rework that, because when I was looking up your Cameron Humphreys, I spent about 5 minutes thinking, he plays for Rotherham, and Sam says he plays for Ipswich, but you're going for the Ipswich one.
I'm going for the Ipswich one, not to say that the Rotherham version hasn't had a impressive start to the season as well, I believe. I think we spoke about him previously. But yeah, this young man, he's only just turned 19, so he played his first games as an 18-year-old relatively recently. And he's been excellent at a period in the season when Kieran McKenna needed it badly, with Lee Evans missing and Don Ball out for the season now. So it's kind of needs must in that area. And he's gone in alongside Sam Morsy, and he's been a revelation, really. Only the three games, but he's played every minute of those league games. He started in the last two cup games. Excellent on the ball. It's his job to circulate the ball now with Evans missing, get the tens involved, get it out to the wide players. Really progressive. I mean, he had an assist in the Port Vale game where he scored his maiden goal, but it took like a deflection. So I don't think he's been awarded it, but it was his kind of driving run in beyond kind of the number 10s, getting to the byline before cutting it back for Ladapo. Scored a brilliant daisy cutter in that game. Type of effort I've seen him have quite often, kind of edge of the box, arriving, you know, patrolling that area from set pieces. Hit the bar yesterday from a similar position yesterday against whoever it was they were playing in the cup.
Buxton.
And I think showed his importance yesterday, given he went off at halftime, you know, 2-0 up, I think it was, 45 minutes. That'll do you. Go and have a rest, considering his importance. And Kieran McKenna spoke about his tactical awareness, which I thought was really interesting for a 19-year-old. He played as one of the 10s at Bracknell in the previous round, and he'd only had one day to work on it on the training ground, and he was excellent. He kind of had the pre-assist for the second goal and also played a lovely reverse pass. So he's got great awareness, lovely range of passing, and similarities to a young lad that was in the team when I went to Ipswich, a lad called Owen Garvin, if you remember. He was probably a little bit younger than Cameron Humphreys, maybe 17. Had a brilliant career. I played in a pre-season friendly and he absolutely lambasted me for giving the ball away, and I didn't know who he was. Obviously, I just arrived there and I was like, who is this geezer? He's like 17, and then by the end of the game, I knew he was incredibly gifted, Owen Garvin, and should have had a longer career at the top level. He probably maybe played in the Prem with Palace, but he should have played a number of games. Maybe
did
a bit.
Did you chirp back? Did you give it back to him?
I think I did, but then probably saw the quality that he had in that game and in the days that followed, and I was like, he's a seriously good player. He had unbelievable mentality, belief, and I see that kind of same maturity in Cameron Humphreys since he stepped up to the first team. So he's probably saved Ipswich a few quid in the transfer market in January, given his quick elevation. So couldn't have been more impressed.
Right, that's Cameron Humphreys of Ipswich and Morgan Whittaker on loan at Plymouth from Swansea. Your scouting reports for this week. Next today, we're going to look ahead to some of the big games coming up this weekend. Remember the Championship? He's teasing us by putting on a single fixture this weekend ahead of the full return on the 10th of December. Sunderland versus Millwall at the Stadium of Light is the game. It was postponed in September following the death of the Queen. Really difficult to kind of make any prediction about this, Adrian, is it? Because we haven't seen the teams for ages. I don't know if you enjoyed Sunderland's brawl on the pitch in their friendly with Al-Shabaab on Friday. Bit of fight about the Mackems, etc.
Yeah, I like that. I was like, yeah, things can get a bit spiky, can't they, in certain friendlies? I suppose intercontinental friendlies create that more, don't they? Because, it's probably officiated in a slightly different way. But no, I think the break came, even though they beat Birmingham, Sunderland, just before the break, away from home. I feel like it still came at a good time for them because they were missing Ross Stewart. Ellis Sims wasn't fully fit. Danny Ballard, obviously a key man, he's been out. But they're all kind of back now. I think Sims will be fit. Stewart and Ballard, very close. They might be on the bench. They might not. So, yeah, once those three are back in the team, I think Sunderland have got a very different look about them. And look, I think the message from Tony Mowbray is, come on, we've got a huge, great stadium here. We've got a brilliant fan base. Let's put on some performances here. They've only won twice at the Stadium of Light this season. They've lost their last two there against Cardiff and Burnley. So yeah, I think they'll come out here with pressing that reset button and give Millwall a tough game. Ahmed Diallo obviously was in great nick, wasn't he, ahead of the break? So it'd be interesting to see if he can pick up from there. So yeah, I don't think this would be an easy starter for Millwall.
Sam, am I being unkind to say that Millwall not pretty, but effective under Gary Rowett this season. Only one defeat in nine before the break.
Maybe a bit unkind, yeah. That's just, it's probably as pretty they've been. As pretty as they've been, I would say. Yeah, it's been a brilliant
run. They
don't
want to be pretty, do they? Millwall fans don't want to be pretty.
Not really. It's a difficult job, I always say. So I think it's just changing things slowly and gradually. If you're too bold, maybe at trying to go for something a little bit left field, it normally backfires. But I think Gary Rowett's, I think he's done a brilliant job. Obviously, they come here off the back of that Preston win. So they have been pretty dire on the road. I think, yeah, the 23rd best away form in the division. And Sunderland, as Clarkey says, 22nd best form for the Mackhams at home. So it's a really difficult game to call, but they'll be buoyant after the win at Preston. They've got one of the form players in the division in Fleming. And the change of shape has really suited them and paid dividends in the last few weeks in this run of games. He did change back to his 3-4-3 in the second half against Preston. So I'll keep an eye on that in this game against Sunderland. But yeah, incredibly difficult game to call. And Sunderland, you would think, given that they have got Ross Stewart nearing the return, Sims fit now, and that lovely luxury of having four diminutive, really attacking support players to pick from, they should turn their home form around soon. But the natives will be eager for that to happen because their home form's really been poor.
Sunderland 6-4 to get the win with Quinn Bett here. Millwall 9-5, the draw 9-4. Into League One, two teams looking to return to the Championship at the first time of asking meet at London Road. It's Peterborough hosting Barnsley. Really nicely set up this one, Clarkey. 4th v 6th, just a point between them.
Yeah, it's a big game, isn't it? Definitely, because some of the clubs outside the playoffs are beginning to put some runs of form together. So I don't think that either can consider themselves cast iron guarantees to be in there. It's not going well for Posh, really, isn't it? I mean, there's speculation. I don't know how true it is over Darren McAntony's long-term future as chairman at the club. And the form's not good. I mean, the away record is dreadful. Went out of the cup, didn't they, against Shrewsbury at the weekend. So they'll be glad to get back at home, where they've been super strong. 7 wins, 1 draw, 1 loss. But Barnsley are one of the form teams in the division. They're loving it. Good young team. Yeah, full of confidence at the moment, I think, under Duff. So yeah, this is going to be quite a lively game. I would expect maybe both teams to score here. That might be something to jump on if you fancied having a flutter at all. But yeah, I think Barnsley are more than capable of going to Peterborough and picking up a result in the game. We'll have to wait and see.
10-3 with Quinn Bett for Posh to get promoted, 6-1 on Barnsley to go up. Elsewhere, the They Used to Be Good derby takes place in the no way ironically named Pride Park. Derby County welcoming Sheffield Wednesday. Derby a point outside the playoffs. Needed a late goal to get past Newport in the cup. There's some spice on this one, isn't there, Sam? Because it's the first time that they've met since that 3-3 draw on the last day a couple of seasons ago that saved Derby and relegated the Owls.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
completely forgot about that. Well done, yeah. Matt. Tremendous memory.
Thanks, soccer base.
Yeah, I mean, two teams that, oh, well, certainly for 45 minutes, Derby really underperformed at Newport. And from the extended highlights and everything I've read, I think Sheffield Wednesday were incredibly fortuitous to make it past Mansfield. Mansfield missed about two or three chances at 0-0, at 1-0 up to put the game to bed. And Darren Moore, as managers probably really don't want to have to do, had to call on some of the big guns, Barry Bannon, Michael Smith, change of shape back to his kind of tried and tested 3-4-1-2 to get over the line. Smith with a couple of goals. So I still think he's a manager who's wrestling around with his best team, his best formation. Paul Warne has always wanted to be a kind of 3-5-2 manager in his successful campaigns at Rotherham, but he went to a 4 in the second half against Newport, transformed with a couple of changes. Barkhuizen came on and was brilliant, injected loads of pace and just that directness, getting past people, getting shots away, everything they didn't have in the opening 45 minutes. So I think both managers have got big decisions to make in terms of which way they go about it in terms of the shapes, but yeah, two sides that are sitting pretty despite, I'd say, relative problems. There's problems for Darren Moore in terms of the performance level, not where they're sitting in the league, and they've been brilliant away from home. And Derby are a point outside the playoffs. So this is a big game, and this is a big game because of the aspirations to get back into the Championship. And I think both teams have kind of underachieved in the games against the better sides in the division. So this will be an opportunity to lay down a bit of a marker, because they invariably take care of business against the poorer sides. This is a big game against a promotion rival.
80 to 1 on QuinBet if you fancy another 3-3 between these two. By the way, price is accurate at the time of recording. Into League 2, truly tasty tussle. Bradford City going to East London to take on the leaders, Leighton Orient. There's a danger in there, Clarkey, that Orient are just going to romp away with this division. Not a danger if you're an Orient supporter, I suppose.
Yeah, it's not a danger, yeah, in their heads. Yeah, there's a possibility. I mean, obviously, I saw Stevenage at the weekend. I think they've got something about them. They'll be hard to shift. Probably say the same about Northampton. But yeah, Bradford are probably one of the clubs on their tail that have got aspirations to get into that top two. I mean, at home, terrific. Leighton Orient this season, 7 wins, 1 draw, just lost the one game. 5 wins in 6, and they've not lost to anyone in the top half yet. If you want to go up automatically, that's the record you want. Just make sure you don't lose to anyone around you, and then obviously spank the teams that are in the bottom half. And that's kind of what Leighton Orient have been doing. And they're not relying on one player to score either, which you probably could say that Bradford are. Paul Smythe's got 8. I was looking at the rest of the guys. 8 other members of that squad have scored at least 2 goals this season under Richie Wellens. So when you've got, you know, players, you know, from defence, midfield, wing, all chipping in with goals on a regular basis, it doesn't half make a difference. Because even when you're not playing well, you just you're confident that you can nick a goal here and there. So yeah, Leighton Orient are strong. But this won't be easy because Bradford are decent travellers.
Yeah, and the player that they rely on, Samuel Adrian referred to there, is 13-goal Andy Cook. He's the key for Bradford this season, right?
Yeah, he is. I agree with what Clarkey says. There's no one that jumps out, really, in the Leighton Orient side that you would say is destined to get 15, 20 goals this season. He will do that this year. And that's after quite a few kind of barren years from his standards. Andy Cook, he's just having an incredible time right now, but they've got good support players. Tyreek Wright's had a good season. I think East has played himself back into form after a long-term injury. I think this is just two really good sides. Two sides that like to possess the ball. Orient, as Clarkey said, have been brilliant against the better sides in the division. Bradford are unbelievable away from home. 6 out of the last 7 they've won on the road in the league. So I think this is a really good game, which could go either way. The one other stat I wanted to pull out was both teams very good when they score first in the game. Orient won 13 of 14, drew the other. Bradford unbeaten as well, 9 wins and 3 draws. So they haven't taken a point when they've gone behind in the game, Bradford. So maybe that first goal will be pivotal if it goes
first goal wins,
Orient's way.
It's going to be a close game, one would assume. Looking forward to that. All right, we are nearly done for today, of course. I've got a tweet of the week, though. It comes from Boreham Wood's George Broadbent. There's a really interesting pattern here, Sam. Say really interesting.
He had a goal nicked off him, so is he sour?
He's not sour.
It was his shot, wasn't it? It went off his centre-half's derby.
Yeah, no, he was his derby. Derby, what rhymes with foot? Derby, come on, what is it?
Derby Kelly.
Derby Kelly.
Belly. I don't. Yeah, I wouldn't have known the backstory.
I don't know
what
Derby Kelly is. What's Derby?
You got to know what a Derby is. You know, we're all getting a slightly bigger Derby than we used to have, Matt. That's all you need to know.
Okay, yeah, that is very much true in my case. Anyway, this is George Broadbent. Basically, I went on the Boreham Wood Twitter feed, and like most clubs do, they retweet some of their players' tweets after wins. All of them had errant spaces in the actual tweet. Really strange. George Broadbent at @gbroady_8 says, great result today, ... into the next round, ... wood emoji, @BruntZach, goalball, ... Bit of an experience showing here, I think, Sam, but the fact that there's a wood emoji pleased me greatly.
I'm just getting up now, sorry.
Don't say that when I've just said wood. Sounds bad.
Oh, sorry. That's so bad. Close of the season there and then.
Well, you know, it's a long time since I've known Luke Garrard, but I would like to think a National League side beating league opponent, there would be a few cans and a curry on the bus. So potentially he's just got a little bit loose with his fingertips as he's tried to type that out. But yeah, no, nothing too much wrong with that. Who's the guy he's tagged in?
I've just
right.
What does goal ball mean? I mean, that,
yeah, goal ball was question. The thing that I didn't really get.
Bit of an in joke, maybe. It sort of goes above our heads. I mean, I've got to say, I've learned something because I didn't know there was a wood emoji, and it can't get a run out that often, can it? I mean, in what circumstances would you be pulling out a tree trunk?
Portland Timbers.
Oh dear, let's move on swiftly from this. It was Zach Brunt who that he tagged in, by the way, and Zach Brunt has also gone for a quote tweet of this goal. What a team, Wood emoji again, at Boreham Wood FC, into the hat, we dare to dream, stars in the eyes emoji. So well done to Boreham Wood, maybe showing a little bit of inexperience in terms of their Twitter output, but good stuff nonetheless. Right, before we go, let's remind you of that new customer offer from our sponsor, Quinbet, to coincide with the World Cup. The guys at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer, where you can now get a free bet worth up to £35 for new customers that sign up only. Head to quinbet.com/world-cup-2022-offer-UK. Head to Quinbet and you can find it from there if that's a bit too tricky for you to remember, but I will put that link in the description of the podcast, and you can find Quinbet on social media using the following handles. On Twitter, it's @Quin_bet. Instagram is Quinbet_official. Facebook is @Quinbet. We are at What the EFL. Do give us a follow there if you can. Many thanks for joining us today. We've got loads to discuss in our show next week, when there'll be plenty of football for us to talk about. Have a great week until then. From all of us here, for now, it's goodbye.